Hi friends, Peyton Jones here to guide you through Matthew 16 today. In our last few chapters, Jesus pushes back on man-made religion. Religion can hold a ton of power for people. Therefore, when you push at power, it sometimes shoves you back, as Jesus experiences in Matthew 16 on our journey through the Word. Verse 1. The Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus and tested him by asking him to show them a sign from heaven. He replied, "When evening comes, you say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, today, it will be stormy, for the sky is red and overcast." You have to love Jesus' sarcasm here. A sign from heaven, you say. You can almost picture him wetting his finger and holding it up in the air as he looks up to the sky and starts to talk about the weather. Cheeky Jesus is one of my favorite versions of Jesus, particularly when he's hitting back at religion. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation looks for a sign, but none will be given it except for the sign of Jonah. Yeah, Jesus says, you've had more signs than you can even process, and you've not been paying attention. Jesus does say they'll get one more sign, the sign of Noah. But what was that? People repenting? They had seen that already. Jesus calming the wind and the waves? They had already seen that too. But when Noah was vomited out of the whale, his pale skin bleached white by the whale's stomach acid made him look like the walking dead. It was a resurrection of sorts. Stay tuned, Jesus says, and walks away. Then Jesus left them and went away. Cheeky Jesus is cool, but mic drop Jesus is even cooler. And Jesus knows that unbelief and cynicism spread like a virus. So in verse 6, he tells the disciples, "Be careful. Be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees." This was a slam against the teaching of the religious Pharisees and Sadducees that had become all about opinions instead of what God actually did and said. So Jesus takes his disciples to the region of Caesarea Philippi, an area noted for paganism. You know religion's in a bad place when pagans are a breath of fresh air. It's the furthest out he's ever taken them, and there were few people there who would have heard of him. So Jesus there asks his disciples about people's opinions in verse 13. "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" they replied. "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Before we read Peter's answer, let me pause to say that this question, who we say Jesus is the most important question any of us will ever answer. And Peter doesn't hesitate in verse 16. "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it." Caesarea Philippi was the place where the gate to the underworld, or Hades, was supposed to have been. In fact, there was a grotto there with a cave said to be the gates of hell, where spirits of deceased people and spirits from the underworld were supposed to have entered into our world according to pagan superstition. And there at the seat of Satan's power, Jesus declares war. But Peter's revelation and declaration at the gates of hell were significant. This realization isn't just the mere intellectual recognition of Jesus being the Messiah. It's a spiritual revelation according to Jesus. In fact, if you see Jesus for who he is, it's not because you're smarter than others, but because it's been given to you to see. "This was not revealed by flesh and blood," Jesus said, "or your gray matter. The firing of your synapses didn't lead you to this, Peter, but the Father in heaven has revealed this to you." Jesus continues in verse 19, "I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven, Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. What's all this loosing and binding about? Different people give different opinions, and some people get downright weird with it. But the reality was that the apostles would give the gospel to the rest of the world. They held the key that would set all the captives free. You'd think that after a statement like that, it'd be all pomposity and boasting. But Jesus knows how his kingdom will conquer the enemy. And it's not what anyone would have ever guessed in verse 21. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hand of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said. "This shall never happen to you." Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." Oh, how the mighty fall, towering on top one moment, crashing to the bottom the next. To be told, "Blessed are you," one moment, and "Get behind me, Satan," the next. Satan? They're all stunned, but nobody has the wits to ask, "Jesus, did you just call Peter Satan?" But it was in fact Satan speaking through Peter, or his words at least, to Jesus, trying to get him to put off the cross. Before they can react, though, Jesus makes it very clear what it means to follow him as the Messiah. Not only must we accept his death, we must accept our own. Verse 24. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good would it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul?" Trying to preserve our life? That's what empires do. Preserve their power. And in a war of attrition, one side musters their forces against another and hopes the other side will run out of warm bodies first. But in this war that Jesus just declared on the gates of hell, this spiritual battle between heaven and Hades, the side that sacrifices the most wins. Losing our lives is the surest way to victory. And it starts by Jesus giving his own life and death first. Strangely, that's the paradox. Jesus telling his disciples that the way to win is to die. And it makes no sense. In fact, not long from now, Jesus will be suffered, be stripped naked, suffer at the hands of evil men as he predicted, and die on a cross like a common criminal. And there he will deal the crushing blow to Satan. It will be the beginning of the end of Satan. It will devastate the gates of hell and completely break the bars and loose the chains. The beginning of the story will look bleak. But then, the sign of Jonah, as Jesus promised in the beginning of this chapter, will be given. The resurrection. In that power, the church will march forward, preaching a gospel that teaches men and women not to fear death. So much that it would turn the world upside down. Every time the church seems to be losing, the gospel will be winning. The kingdom will be advancing. But Jesus isn't done yet. There is one final victory coming in verse 27. "For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what they have done. Truly, I tell you, some standing here will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." Okay, I know what some are wondering. What the heck does that mean? Does it mean Jesus is saying the return of Christ is right around the corner? And Jesus is proved wrong? Nope. If you read the next verses found in the next chapter, you can see Jesus actually shifting slightly as an aside, some of the people here will catch a glimpse of this. They would see Jesus transfigured on the mount. It would be like the trailer before the release of the blockbuster, yet to be seen for thousands of years. Well, that's all the time we have for today. But no, Christianity has only won by those willing to lose their lives for him who lost it for them. Those that are willing to lose their lives on this side of heaven find it eternally on the other side.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.